Okay, so on the topic of the futurists, we started off by seeing some quotes of some things that people are probably pretty embarrassed about having said, like the president of IBM who said, I think in the 40s, there's maybe a market for 5 computers in the world. Or Bill Gates who said, who would ever want more than 640,000 bytes of information? You know, and that's, you know, you can't even get a picture for that now. You can barely even do text for that now. So things that we are always amazed by what can actually happen in the future if we keep our eyes open. In the 1960s, people laughed when futurists said that we could have wrist-sized computers. Remember back back in the 80s, it was really cool when you could get a watch that had a calculator in it. That was so cool. My dad has a PhD in math, and for him, he learned on slide rules. And the idea of having a calculator, something this big on your desk, was just amazing that you could get that type of computing power. And it starts off with just 4 function calculators. Now we're doing graphing calculators and not even thinking that this is a really neat thing. It's just something that's permeated our culture. We talked before about the advent of the internet and the importance of that, starting back in 1970s with ARPA that designed the foundation of the internet. Nobody ever thought that this was going to be something that we all would be sitting in this room and have access to anything else in the world, that we could be easily communicating with somebody in Brazil and looking at pictures that, you know, my sister-in-law just announced she was pregnant. We already have pictures of the baby through ultrasound that have been emailed. And so it's just amazing what we can do. And nobody ever imagined that we'd have that communication ability. In the 1980s, the web was still science fiction. That's not so long ago. You know, that is, okay, maybe it is for you guys, but for somebody who's almost 40, that's not a long time ago. And eBay did not exist. And that sounds like kind of a stupid thing, but we'll come back to why eBay becomes so important. There's some laws that have really kind of been uncannily true throughout the years. The first one is Moore's Law, and you may have heard of this one before. And it was the founder of Intel back in 1965 wrote this paper and published it. And what he said is the pace of change, of technological progression, it doubles every 18 months. So he said, if I have a microchip that is, you know, can hold 1 megabyte today, that microchip is going to be able to hold 2 megabytes in 18 months. Because of the pace of technology, in another 18 months, it'll hold 4. Now, what do we know about the aspect of doubling? It quickly becomes exponential. So 4 becomes 8, 8 becomes 16, 16 becomes 32. It's not long before we get into billions and trillions. And once we get to that, we don't even know how to define the terms. I mean, how many of you know what comes after a gigabyte? Okay. It's a terabyte, and in 5 years you're gonna think, I didn't even know that. Okay, yeah. And so right now I'm already like 80 gigs. I'm all maxed out. A few years ago, 20 gigs was more than I could ever imagine. And so what's surprising is he said that in 1965, and still we're finding that computing power is doubling every 18 months. And that's kind of scary when you think about what do we have at our fingertips right now. We're gonna have double that in a year and a half. What are you going to have in your classroom? Think 3 years from now. 3 years from now, what we have now is going to be old technology, very old technology. Are you going to be able to keep up with all that new stuff? Are you going to be able to say, oh, my kids have that thing at home. They've got that new Nintendo Wii at home, and they're using haptic technology at home. Do I even know what that is? Because it's happening so quickly. I'll show you in a few minutes. One good example of this, and I kind of talked about it already, is the cell phone. The cell phone that I have right here in my hand right now, this has as much computing power as a high-scale computer back in 1995. If I would have put in big bucks into a computer in 1995, this can do everything that it can do. Okay? That's pretty amazing for something that, you know, now, you know, okay, it's not cheap. You know, a couple hundred dollars isn't cheap in my book, but compared to, you know, a couple thousand dollar computer a few years ago, that's really amazing. And the web is another example. It didn't even exist 15 years ago, and now look at what it's become. The next law is Metcalfe's law, and I don't think I've talked about this idea in the past, But what it basically says is if, and he was the founder of the internet back in the 1970s, is if you have one computer, you have one ability. If you have another computer, you might have another ability. But by putting those two computers together, you don't just have this one and this one, you actually have more. Think about it in terms of discussion. I think I've talked about generative discussion before. If Cheryl and Emily are having a discussion, Cheryl has her thoughts, Emily has her thoughts, and they start talking about their thoughts. As they are talking, new thoughts are going to arise. Not just the sum of those two parts. They're actually going to create new knowledge from that discussion, generating new knowledge. So the knowledge or the discussion itself is generative. That's the same with computers. If I have one computer doing this process and one doing this process, together they can do more than the sum of their two parts. Now imagine then the next law, which is Reed's law. And he says, not only is that generative when you're adding in more things, but what if you keep adding more and more and more pieces? So think of the example. If I'm in a, let's say I'm in a family and we're having a little, I know that none of you have any little tiffs in your family, but imagine there's a little conflict going on in your family. So Amanda and I are having a little fight. Right now it's Amanda and I having a fight, and then Danielle walks in the room and she kind of gets in on it too, so we're having this little fight. Now Danielle is fighting with me, but she's also fighting with Amanda. So how many connections do we have of fights going on now? First, we just had one connection. Now we have one connection here, one connection here, and one connection there. Okay, now all of a sudden, Ashley walks in and she joins our fight as well. Now we've got this connection here, that connection there, this connection here, that connection here, here, here. Okay, so how quickly has this become huge? And that is what Reed's law says. It says, David Reed in 1999 says, the value of a network grows exponentially with the number of users. So the more people who are fighting, the worse the fight's going to get. Or the more people that are working collaboratively, the better that incredible product is going to be. And that also, it's funny because what we find in education is when we allow students to work together collaboratively, they actually do better work, even though often we as adults tend to hate to work in those collaborative groups in classrooms. Kids really learn more in that environment. So the idea is everything is going fast, and now that we're all in on it, we have lots of computing power working together, incredible things are happening. A good example of how this is happening in computing is there's this project that does prime numbers, and I'm not sure if it's still around. It used to be around. And what you do is you just sign up and you'd say, okay, I'm willing to do it. And what happened, and we did it for a while, is your computer, when you're not using it, what it would do is it would kind of say, okay, I'm available. You can use me for another purpose. And this other supercomputer would download or come to our computer in our house and say, what I want you to do is start figuring these mathematical processes. And what it was trying to do was to find the next prime number. So if, you know, from 1, 2, 3, 5, 7, okay, so it was trying to find the next one. Now we already know to, I don't know, thousands of digits, maybe a million digits. But the idea was they wanted to get to the next one. The only way to do that is by doing millions of calculations, and that takes a lot of time, even for one computer to do. And so by getting all of these different people's computers working together, we could find that much more quickly. So maybe, you know, for a mathematician, that's a great thing. Maybe for you, it's not such a great thing. But what if it comes down to maybe we could solve the issue of AIDS if we could do all of these different models and find out what could actually battle AIDS? Maybe we could create an idea of world peace if we could have all these computers work together and try out all these different scenarios and find out what might work. Maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. But by putting them together, that's what makes the difference. So what this means for you is, as a teacher, because things happen so quickly and there's so much room for change so quickly, it's difficult for you to predict what's going to be out there next. We've been thinking for a long time that we would have those phones that we'd be able to talk to somebody, the video phones, for a long time, and that still isn't really a reality. So if we put all of our eggs in that basket, it really wouldn't have panned out. But there are other things out there, like the handheld revolution, that we didn't predict at all. And so it's incredible what the implications of our predictions versus our non-predictions. Also, when you're planning for the future, when you're planning for your classroom, be careful when you make hardware purchases, because know that what you're buying now probably will be old technology in 2 years, because we know that it will have doubled in 2 years because of Moore's Law. And so that doesn't mean don't buy it, because if you don't buy it now, you're not going to be ready to use what's coming out in 18 months. But make sure that you're going to get something that is going to have a longer lifespan. Know that you're going to have to do a lot with training, because you're not even going to know how to use this stuff. Remember when we went to Bracken and there were teachers who said, my kids know it better than I do, and I've got so much stuff I don't even know how to use? Well, that's the reality. You can only know so much. So you've got to keep up with it as an educator constantly, so that you aren't going to be so far behind you can't catch up. And then you also need to be thinking outside of the box in terms of what's possible. And that's when you read the Fitzgerald and Lester article at the beginning of today's class. That's what that was about. So, it says, nurse, get on the internet, go to surgery.com, scroll down and click on Are You Totally Lost icon. I think this is really cute. Of course, you don't want that to be your neurosurgeon, but you know, and the reality of it is, there are places now where surgery is done remotely. An example is many airports now have, they'll have people on staff, like, you know, like a, My brother-in-law, a person who is in the ambulance.
Paramedic.
Okay, you'll have a paramedic there and maybe a nurse. But if somebody comes in and they need right away surgery, that person isn't really capable of doing it. So what they'll do is they can use video connections. They can actually show the doctor what's going on, and the doctor can actually direct those people what to do. So this isn't so far from what we can do. How many of you have used WebMD? You know? You know, when your child is sick at night and you're really not sure, you've got a two-year-old or a six-month-old, and you know they've got this weird rash on their face, yeah, you're up there typing on your computer in WebMD, finding out what's going on. Okay, so at the American Educational Researcher Association meeting in 2004, Ron Anderson gave a presentation, and he allowed me to use his slides. So according, these are according to him, but I think seems pretty accurate from what I've read. What should we look for in the future? What's going to be coming out? First, dynamic network analysis and display systems. You all have worked with Inspiration. What this is in Inspiration, you can put any graphicing you want, including your own picture. Remember how I talked, I think I brought in an example of my son's work where he took a picture of himself? No, I didn't. Okay, well, he put a picture of himself on his Inspiration map, and he's second grade. Okay, so that's not a difficult thing. So if you want to look at interactions between people, you can see, you could just put pictures and describe things. Maybe if you want to show, you want to do a little project on Sojourner Truth. Who are the people that she came into contact with in her life? She came in contact with Ulysses S. Grant, Harriet Tubman, Abraham Lincoln. And so you can start to have those pictures, and then they could even click on that picture and it'll maybe take you to the Wikipedia article about Harriet Tubman or about Ulysses S. Grant. This one is really neat. It's happening quickly. What it's showing is the relationships between people working in a different department. So if I want to know the people that are doing the mathematical ecology stuff, who are they talking to? They are talking to the people who are doing agent-based models, and they're talking to one person over here in statistical physics. Now, what this might say is, clearly, this is a really important person. How can we have more of these people communicating with these people? So what are the relationships that are going on? And there's another example later that I think is really great for education. Here it is. There's a student network structure at Countryside School District. What this represents is racial communications between high school and middle school students. The whites are all yellow, the blacks are all green, and the pinks are mixed race students. Everything above this line is a high school student, and everyone below this line is a middle school student. What can you tell me about the communications in this school? Lauren?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. And what do you know about the relationship between the middle school and the high school students? Okay, so we've got a bigger middle school population. What else can you tell me? What's that, Sarah?
Saying that they look a little more willing to mingle in middle school, like.
Okay. Okay. The relationships between the different racial groups are more willing to communicate in this environment. Okay, some other things is, notice how often do you see a white middle school child talking to a black high school child? Or a white high school child talking to a black middle school child? There's no peer mentoring at all between these. Why do you think there's probably this going on?
Brothers and
sisters, probably siblings. But when we think about mentoring, what could it do for these students if they were mentoring these students? And wouldn't that be sad if this is how they were mentoring those students? They weren't doing this cross-racial mentoring that's going on. And then some other things. What do you notice about the mixed race students? They mingle beautifully, don't they? So maybe that's the benefit. What do you think about these over here? Yeah. What are you going to recommend for these students? Probably some kind of counseling. We know from recent research of violence in schools, severe violence, killings, usually it's your students who are more the outsiders who are the ones who probably are more likely to have violent behaviors and lashing out. That doesn't mean they will, but those are the students that you want to check out and make sure that they're healthy and happy and things are going the way that they should. Especially in middle school, because that tends to be where you do a lot of really stupid things in middle school, you might remember.
I taught 7th grade yesterday. I'm so frustrated. I need to stop doing that to myself because I don't even want to be near them. The attitude. This little girl, she was 13 years old, she had her lip pierced, and she kept sitting there playing with her piercing. I kept telling her to take it out. She'd take it out, she'd put it back in her mouth and play with it in her tongue. Finally, I just took it away from her. I was going to throw it away. I was so pissed. And all she could sit there and say is how much she's in love with Kurt Cobain, the main guy of
dead for a long time.
I know, and she's talking about
when he was.
I know, and she wants to be a tattoo artist, and she wants to get a tattoo of him all over her, and I'm just,
and what's going to happen with you in a class like that? Because if you're doing the older grades, that is just so typical middle school. You know, I taught that for 3 years. That child is having some serious stuff going on with her. And what you want to do is you want to kill her in your class because you're not able to actually teach in your class because you're dealing with her stupid little piercing the whole time and her fascination with this dead guy. But the reality of it is there's something that's going on inside that person who's needing a lot of love. She's probably not feeling connected right now, especially that she has a fascination with somebody that
dead.
Is dead. Yeah. And what that means is you need to be working very closely with your counselor on this issue, because what's going to happen is you're going to end up ignoring her. All she's going to get is negative reinforcement, which is going to be what is going to be a self-fulfilling prophecy for her. And it's sad, but that's what's happening, because she should have been 2 years ahead. And it's a sad situation, but that is a reality in our schools. And know that we aren't trained as counselors in this room. We're trained as teachers. But we also need to be trained enough to know when we can't handle it anymore and it's time to go and get help. And with middle level, there's a lot of kids who need that kind of help. Okay, the next one I promised you I'd talk about was eBay. How many of you have bought or sold something on eBay? How many of you have looked at eBay and thought, oh, I should buy that? Okay. All right. So quite a few of you. Anybody not know what eBay is? Raise your hand, really, if you don't. Okay. All right. Okay. Yeah. I don't have any idea. Does anybody know? I would assume it's electronic something, but you know what? We could do a real quick search. What does eBay mean? Okay, so you know what? Do that right now. Go on to ask.com and write, what does eBay mean? And let us know when you find out. The reason that eBay is up here as a futurist pick is it says web-based reputation and trust evaluation systems. We live in a world where we aren't very trustworthy, maybe, of our next-door neighbors. And yet, we have this thing called eBay where we buy stuff from total strangers. How is it those of you who are regular eBay users or who have used it, how do you know that you can trust that person? Kayla?
I don't think, well, you, on here they have the feedback system and stuff so you can read on people, but I bought up half.com, which is actually, it's run by eBay, and I bought all my textbooks on there, and I only got one of the five that I ordered. So I was...
Was there a trust evaluation system on that?
And there was, but...
How many people had...
Actually, quite a few.
Really?
So, I mean, I've bought on eBay before and never had an issue with that.
For it, they never sent it.
Well, yeah, and then you have to file a claim with eBay, and then it takes, they say they have up to, like, 6 months to return your money back to you.
Okay, anybody else? Trust evaluation systems. If you want to sell something on eBay, the best way is to start small. You want to sell a little, you know, matchbox car or something really small at the beginning because you want to build up your reputation. And your reputation is based on what people say when they buy stuff from you. Yes, I got it in a timely manner. I didn't have to quibble over the price. You know, it was clear cut. It came in the box just like they said, or it only had the one scratch just like they told me. But the idea is that you want to build this reputation, and you build it through sales that you do. And a good one is going to have 1,000, 20,000 people who have given you, you know, 99% positive feedback. One person giving you negative feedback severely hurts your reputation. That means that as a seller, it's important to you that you get positive feedback from people and that you do exactly what you say, because one is going to hurt you a lot. Everybody can go in and read about what that person said, about why they hated your service. And so that is what trust systems are all about. And just for fun to show you how much eBay has really started to become ubiquitous technology, I've got this little song by Weird Al, who I'm sure you all love and appreciate. It's probably not.
Are you a peaceful, a rare, Miss Snow Globe, a smurf, TV tray I bought on eBay? My house is filled with this crap, shows up in bubble wrap most every day. What I bought on eBay, tell me why.
I need another pet rock,
tell me why.
I got that Alf alarm clock, tell me why.
I bid on Shatner's old toupee. Who is liable to snipe you with 2 seconds left to go? Whoa, got PayPal or Visa, whatever'll please ya, as long as I've got the dough. I'll buy your tchotchkes, sell me your watch, please. I'll buy.
Lungs.
like that kind of music. And the idea of the season, the Christmas season, I told my children that we were going to start doing Christmas music today. We're going along. They want to listen to Rudolph. I put in my little iPod, and, you know, it just chooses the next song. And as soon as they get out of the car, what's the next song? Frosty the Dope Man. So you need to watch with this whole idea of, you know, anything can come up next. So now you know what kind of music I listen to. Great. All right. The next one, massively multiplayer online role-playing games. Did you find it, Emily? No, you can. Oh, okay, we'll have to keep an eye out for it. How many of you are game players? None? Okay, what kind of games do you play? Which? The Sims. The Sims? Okay, some of you didn't. It tends to be, right now, still males are more commonly using it. Some research that's happening here at this university by P.G. Schrader, Dr. Schrader upstairs, is on massively multiplayer role-playing games, and he finds that it is tends to still be males, but it also tends to be very bright males. So your engineering geeks, you know, your computer programming geeks, people like my husband, he plays games like Civilization and War of Warcraft and things like that. So this is a way of the future, and this is a means of communication that your students can often use that you might not understand. If they're talking about the avatars and you don't know what they're talking about, they're using game terminology that's moved into to ubiquitous terminology. There are, though, some really neat examples of some of these types of games that are available in educational arenas, and it's something really worth thinking about. One is River City. This was created by researchers at Harvard, and it's really intended, I think, for high school or middle level. And the idea is that there's been some type of a disease that's broken out in, I think, the late 1800s, and you have to go around and start finding out what has caused this. And you have to go and do water samples and find out what bacteria is living in the water, and you have to go and do social communications, talking to different people. The other one that's intended for lower level students is Quest Atlantis, and there's little ways that you can move around in this environment, and teachers can set it up so that students can find things that the teachers are wanting to do. So if you enjoy game playing, so Amanda, you'd be a good person, you might look into Quest Atlantis and see how you might be able to use it. Any luck with that?
No, we don't have a transformer.
Okay, could you bring it in so I can at least show it to him?
Sure.
The next thing is voice over internet protocol, voice over IP, maybe you've seen it, or written this way. The idea of this is that when you pay for your telephone, it costs you money. When you communicate over the internet, though, it's not costing you once you already have your, thank you, it's not costing you once you already have your internet connection. So one way to do that is by using something like Skype. It used to be, I remember back in the 70s, my dad was stationed in Ramstein, Germany, and my mother was so sad to be so far away from her mother because, you know, we couldn't see her maybe once a year, probably not even that. And talking to her cost so much money to call overseas, and it took forever. So my mom used to call her mother when she knew that she'd be at work so that her mother wouldn't answer the phone, just so she could know that she was connecting. We don't need that now. If you've got, you know, a sister or a brother that's in Iraq right now serving our country, they have where you can see them on video. You can talk to your brother or sister or, you know, your son or daughter or your parents that are there. You can do that now because we have this capability of going over the internet. But one really neat thing that's happening now is being able to use telephones using this technology. Clark County School District and UNLV have just recently put in a lot of money into transferring, instead of using regular telephone lines, to using voice over internet. So now what can happen is when you are in your classroom and you pick up your phone, you're actually not calling over a regular telephone line. You're calling over the internet. It costs a lot of money to switch the system over. But what that means is for every phone that's in your building, they don't have to pay $12 a month or $15 a month or whatever the regular phone bill is now. That's all gone because now it's over the internet. And so, you know, there's regular upkeep that they have to do, and they have to pay to keep those internet connections open, but it's a very different philosophy about communications now. Here's an example of a comm badge center from Voicera, and this is usually used in medical venues. What it does is you wear it And it has a little GPS reader in it and knows where you are in the hospital, and a little tracker. And what will happen is, let's say that there is a somebody's having a heart attack. I don't know any of this language. And they need a crash cart. Does that sound? Okay, I've watched ER, so I think that's how they do it. Okay, so they need a crash cart there. What it will do is that little thing will say, I know that we need two nurses that have these capabilities. I know that I need one tech that has this capability. I know that I need one medical doctor that has this certification. It will do this instantaneously on a computer and say, okay, where are those four closest people, or however many people you need with whatever certifications you need, the people with those qualifications that are closest to that person having a heart attack. It will then send signals to those people's little thing, and it will say, you know, code blue or whatever, and it'll tell you where it is through this little speaker. If you can't do it, let's say I'm a doctor working with another patient, I push that little button and it will automatically say, okay, that person's not available. It will go to the next closest doctor. And then all of a sudden Steve gets it and he says, okay, I can go, so I'm the next closest person. Or he pushes his button because he can't do it. And it'll keep going until it finds the closest person in physical proximity. Pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. Okay, so the educational uses for that, I'm not sure, but I'm sure that if we spent some time, we could come up with some great things. Okay. Next is radio frequency identification tagging, RFID. Have any of you heard of that? Okay, it was really science fiction when I heard of this a few years ago, and now I'm hearing it more and more. Self-organizing work areas is a really neat way to think about it. What it is everything can have, you can even print out on a piece of paper a radio frequency identification tag. And you can put these on anything and everything that you want. And what that allows you to do then is, using GPS, you can track exactly where it is. So let's just say you're a teacher who maybe isn't the most organized person in the world, and you lose this report card that you needed, but you had an RFID chip on it, which could be just a little microchip that you can't even hardly see. If it was on that report card, you can find out exactly where it is. I could go to my computer and say, find out where it is, and it'll find it. How this is being used in the real world right now, I just think this is so exciting, is there are certain grocery stores now that are set up with all of their items, or many of their items using, actually all of them, using RFID chips. And this, I think, is happening in Japan. There aren't a lot of them out there yet. What'll happen is I can put everything in my cart, walk through the door, and it reads everything that's in my cart and automatically charges my account. It knows everything that's in there. Pretty amazing. Now, here's one way that it's being used for research. Let's say that I'm, parquet, and I have a parquet margarine that has, low fat, and I have parquet margarine that's not low fat. What I can do is I can know if somebody goes and picks up the one that's non-fat, puts it down, and picks up the one that's fat. Now, what does that mean? For marketing, I can say, what was the difference? Did they want the one that was fat, or maybe they wanted the one that had the bright blue cover on it, and they didn't want the one with the yellow? So it can tell me a lot about packaging. Or I can go and say, they put down my parquet margarine and they picked up the Kraft margarine. Why did they pick that up? So I can go, and then maybe I can go and do market research and say, why did you pick that one up instead? But they can know physically what is happening with those items when they're in the store. Imagine, we're probably not that far off, that I can walk through and it knows, maybe I have an RFID chip on me, and it knows what my bank account is. Automatically, when I walk out the door, it's gone.
It's called RFID.
RFID, radio frequency identification tag.
So the Law and Order that was on last night, SVU, had to deal with something like that. Bob Saget played in there and put a chip in his wife's shoulder to track where she goes. Every door that she enters, it tracks what time she entered and what time she exited because she was having an affair. But that's weird.
Now, what if you have a teenager and you're a parent, though?
Woohoo!
What if you put it on your car? Now, it's not what if anymore. It is so easy now. Have you seen the telephones?
Disney,
oh, I didn't bring it.
Disney has GPS now.
A lot of them now have GPS capability. Your parents can know wherever your phone has gone. Okay, now, is that really what you wanted your parents to know when you were, a senior in high school? Okay, but you can know this about your kids, okay? You can know everywhere that your car has gone and how fast it went every bit of the way. You can also know, you can have it on a person. Imagine in probation. if you want to know where an individual is, if they've left the state line. Remember that one with Sylvester Stallone, where they put the thing around your neck and your head blew off if you went out of the zone?
I've never seen that one.
Yeah. Oh, great. Old flick. Yeah, so I don't know that we'll ever get to the blow off your head if you leave the state, but, you know, it's not far from being impossible. You know, it is possible. Whether it's plausible is a totally different thing. So, radio frequency identification tagging. Next, wearable, implantable, and paintable computer and GPS chips. And these are actual pictures of prototypes. So here's just a girl, looks like she's wearing some funky glasses, but she's actually watching something that isn't necessarily there. This is something that they use in military regularly, so they can, you know, not just see in the dark, but they can also see other things that are going on. They can see through the computer imagery, increase their peripheral vision. This is not science fiction, it's just stuff that we don't see yet very often. Here's one, video glasses, ideal for workers like traffic police. They can, maybe that little video glass is telling them what speed that car was going that just went by them. Okay. Here we've got, you've got your little video here, but you're watching it up here on your eye. Okay, what if I want to see, I want to work on my, let's say I want to watch a movie, I want to watch TV on here. Okay, I can put a TV show on here, I download it from my TV, I put it on here when I'm on the plane tomorrow, I can watch TV. But this is a really little screen. What I can do is if I put on glasses and plugged them into something, if I had them, which I don't, then I could make it as big as I wanted and it would have a totally different feel. Yeah, well, I don't add my TiVo onto this. We download it to the computer, and then we use that SD card to put it on. But in the future, you won't have to do that. It can be done remotely using Bluetooth or whatever. Here's another one. This is actually a jacket that was made by Pioneer, and in the jacket, it has the video phone in it. Amazing. Okay, haptics, and this one is really fun. It's a new reality. If you don't like it, you can leave. And video games have been a big thing for haptics. Haptics is the idea of having a physical sensation. So if I want to, let's say, how many of you have been to Disneyland or Disney World and been to the ant one where the bugs go under your feet?
Bugs Life.
And the smell, you smell the stinky stink bugs and they sneeze on you and all the water. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, that is what haptic technology is. But also there are like haptic gloves. If I'm holding a haptic glove or I have a haptic glove in my hand, it could maybe, I could experience warmth, or it could be, it could tighten around, like if I'm holding a sword, it might feel like I'm pushing it into somebody's body or something if I wanted to. So think in terms of game technology. Think also in terms of military practicing. When I push that button, when did that gun really shoot? Where did it go? The newest version of this, the reality of it is this technology has really come a long way because there is a big desire to get it, and the desire to get it is not necessarily something that we want to talk about in education. That's the sex trade. This is something that's really of interest to many people who like that kind of stuff. Okay, but now here is one that is entering the public arena, which you're going to be hearing and seeing a lot about. This is on sale now, in stores, That's the Nintendo Wii that's already out. What's that going to do for childhood obesity? Finally, we've got something, and that's haptic technology, being able to move around, and it knows where you are. You what?
I have Wii, Nintendo Wii, and you can perform the surgery.
Okay, and I think I showed you guys frogguts.com. It's a great place where you can go and you can dissect frogs without actually having to dissect the frog or the squid or the pig, whatever. This actually is technology. What she's saying, you can do it to practice surgery. Imagine you have a kid in fifth grade who's really interested in being a doctor someday. That kid can start doing surgery in fifth grade, because it's not on a real person. Okay, we aren't gonna have time to go through everything, but electronic mentors, what I think you read about in your article there, the idea that you could have a person, or not a person, but somebody that's kind of in the back of your head telling you stuff that, giving you ideas, like when I ask a question like, what does eBay stand for? That can actually, maybe in my brain, take care of that. The last one is visual, musical, and literacy, or literary arts. These pictures were painted by a computer. They're in this book by Ray Kurzweil, The Age of Spiritual Machines. A computer created those, not a human being. And here is a poem written by a computer. Sashayed down the page, through the lioness nestled in my soul. Okay, I can't write that well. Okay, I think. Okay, the last one is accessibility, and the $100 computer is the big one in that. And here is a picture. Ah, I want to show it to you. Can't go back. I just want to show you a picture of the $100 computer. We have not purchased it yet in the United States on a large scale, but some countries like Brazil have purchased one of these for every child in their schools. In the entire country. Amazing. Okay, we will meet again on Monday. I'll see you then. Sorry, we didn't have time to do that. Okay, I do need the papers back, these papers. Sorry about that. Thank you.
Can I make a meeting time with you so you can help me with my
yes.
portfolio?
Yes. When would you like to do that? The problem is I'm going to be out of town.
Okay.
So, is there specific stuff that you need? I have time today.
Yeah?
Yeah. Like, now until 2.
Now until 2?
Yeah.
Can I have class, but then I have a break for like an hour and a half. Can I come after my class?
What time is it out?
It'll be 12:45.
Yeah. I'll be in my office 3:43.
Okay.